All right, great. All right, hello everyone. So obviously I'm presenting today on behalf of my colleague, Dr. Prakash Moulay, who could not be here today. I did not participate in this investigation, so I will throw out that disclaimer, but it's a really interesting one that happened in one of our larger counties. I did want to acknowledge Michael Wise sitting in the back, who's from this county health department, Hillsborough, and participated in the investigation. So I think between the two of us, hopefully we can answer questions on this study. All right, so a little bit of background. On October 9th, 2015, a three-year-old boy, case one, went to the emergency department. For about 3 to 4 weeks prior to this, he had experienced anorexia, weight loss, and decreased activity. During the hospital stay, he developed rash, tachycardia, hypertension, altered mental state. His condition started to deteriorate, and he developed painful pink discoloration of the hands and feet. So actually, at first, the rabies was suspected initially. The parents mentioned that they had bats under their porch where their child liked to play, apparently, and so there was some concern that that could have been the issue. And so at first, the hospital was following up on that with rabies testing. After that was ruled out, on October 21st, the hospital contacted the health department and discussed some potentials for testing and moving forward. So after all of the routine blood and urine tests and brain imaging came back with no significant findings indicating rabies, they started to suspect heavy metal toxicity. And laboratory tests were ordered, and that was about 4 weeks after the child was admitted to the hospital. Yeah. Actually, so I have a typo on this slide. On November 11th, we received the laboratory results for his urine testing identified by the hospital. This says 29.5 micrograms per liter. Actually, it was 79 micrograms per liter. Yeah. So a little bit about mercury poisoning surveillance in Florida. It is considered a reportable condition in Florida, so all physicians, laboratories, healthcare providers are required to report cases to the Florida Department of Health. Mercury poisoning is diagnosed by clinical presentation and laboratory confirmation, and elevated levels are defined as greater than or equal to 10 micrograms per liter in urine and whole blood, and greater than or equal to 5 micrograms per gram in hair samples, and so clearly this met that definition of mercury poisoning. Clinical presentation of mercury poisoning varies depending on the form of mercury and the route of exposure. Any organ system may be affected. So a confirmed case of mercury poisoning is defined as a clinically compatible illness in a person with elevated mercury labs. A probable case is a person with clinically compatible illness and either has a mercury exposure history or an epidemiological link with a confirmed case. So a little bit of background on mercury. Elemental mercury also, you know, many of you are probably familiar with this and have done some investigations related to this. It's known as quicksilver or liquid silver. It's naturally occurring. It can be obtained by heating mercury-containing ores. It's used in many industries, the electrical industry, and found in instruments such as thermometers and barometers. And it had been used clinically until, you know, that's really started to be phased out due to the toxicity. And I should mention, too, the other sources include diet and dental fillings. So routes of exposure. Elemental mercury is toxic primarily through inhalation of the mercury vapors. It's slowly absorbed through the skin, and may cause skin and eye irritation. Elemental mercury droplets may be absorbed through eye contact, but ingestion is not an important route of acute exposure, as almost no elemental mercury is absorbed through the gastrointestinal tract. And a little bit about signs and symptoms. What should we be looking for in these types of cases? The signs and symptoms vary for acute exposures to mercury, depending on the form, if it's elemental or inorganic. Acute exposure to high levels of elemental mercury vapor may cause inflammation of the lungs, difficulty breathing or shortness of breath, chest pain, and dry cough. Effects may improve or worsen, leading to fluid accumulation in the lungs. Acute toxicity may also cause kidney damage, kidney failure, rapid heart rate, hypertension, and the patient may have a metallic taste and difficulty swallowing, abdominal cramps, and diarrhea. And central nervous system effects include headache, weakness, and visual disturbances. Skin reactions associated with skin contact to liquid or mercury vapors are rare, but rash or inflammation of the skin are possible. So a little bit more back to our investigation. On November 12th, the Florida Department of Health in Hillsborough County was notified about this case of mercury poisoning by the Florida Poison Information Center network. An interview was conducted with the case's father to do an assessment of his hobbies and potential exposures and, looking at an increased risk of exposure to mercury. They also collected information on exposures in the home, such as broken thermometers, blood pressure cuffs, and fluorescent light bulbs. No apparent exposures were indicated by the parents. And so one potential, after all of that was ruled out, they started to explore the daycare, where the child spends a lot of his time. On November 13th, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection provided testing of the parents of the home where the child lived. So we started with the home. They found it to be free of mercury contamination. They then went to the daycare center and tested in several areas throughout the daycare center. Those mercury vapor levels came back at ranges between 50 and 87 micrograms per cubic meter. And what was discovered was that the owner of the daycare had purchased an old blood pressure cuff to use as a toy for the children, and she just thought that would be, had the best intentions, thought that would be a realistic toy for the kids to play with, put it out in the play area for the kids to enjoy. But after about 3 weeks, the kids had pulled apart some of the equipment, and so she never noticed. There was no observation of mercury, but, she put it away into her garage and just thought, okay, well, I'll remove this toy. They broke it and didn't think anything else about it. And I should mention, of course, when that was found, the daycare center was immediately closed until remediation occurred. So the remediation, on November 20th, the U.S. EPA conducted the remediation, removed any visible mercury, the carpet pads. They obtained the broken blood pressure cuff and sealed that in a plastic bag. The floor was cleaned with an Epsom salt wash. This is the plastic bag with the blood pressure cuff, so. So the cleanup and testing. The daycare was ventilated after heating to remove any vapors of the mercury. To assess the possibility that children may have carried mercury out of the daycare on their shoes or clothing or anything like that, the parents of the children who attend the daycare were asked to bring their cars in for testing. And so once it was confirmed that there were no levels detected in the cars, they discontinued follow-up. So had they found something, they would have continued testing at the different homes. But at that point, we identified that the exposure was really limited to the home daycare only. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registries suggests an action level for mercury vapors in residential settings of 1 micrograms per cubic meter. So once the daycare dropped below that recommended level, it was reopened. So the individuals picked up in addition to the child. So we had 23 total individuals that were tested, 16 with elevated mercury levels, and 10 of those were children. and the three adults, three were visitors to the home and three were workers at the, this was a large home daycare. 13 met the department's surveillance case definition, 12 confirmed and one probable, based on their elevated mercury levels and a diagnosis of mercury poisoning by a medical professional. And the ages ranged from less than one, we had an infant with exposure, to 71 years of age, with the median age of only three years old. The majority were male, 100% non-Hispanic white, and most were residents of Hillsborough County, but two resided in a neighboring county. For chelation therapy, we had 9 people who received one round of chelation therapy to increase the removal of the mercury from the body. Following the treatment, we had 5 people whose urine levels remained elevated, but no further treatment was given, and eventually all of the individuals completely recovered. However, we're still unclear about the long-term effects on the, such a young population with such high levels of exposure. So a little bit about lessons learned and what we did as a result of being involved in this investigation. The Department of Health has developed a liquid mercury health notice to educate daycare owners and others about the dangers of mercury in daycares. The Florida Department of Children and Families is our state agency who license and regulate daycare centers. They provided 1,200 hard copies of this fact sheet through a direct mail outreach and sent another 8,000 to facilities that use internet access for correspondence with their agency. We've also posted this health notice on the Department of Health's website. So some lessons learned. The investigation was crucial to identify and eliminate that exposure of mercury. Like I said, at first we were a little confused about where to go from there once the parents' home didn't test out and there was some suspicion that maybe the parents weren't being forthcoming. And so, as I described too, there was quite a delay on the hospital end in terms of even considering mercury exposure and testing, with a 4-week delay before considering, ordering those labs. It helped identify additional people with exposure. It informed the remediation efforts. And as identified in case 1, a diagnosis of mercury poisoning should be considered by healthcare providers in cases with nonspecific symptoms that involve behavioral changes, organ systems like gastrointestinal and neurological. So some conclusions. Because the initial investigation with case 1 did not identify any source of mercury exposure, there were no reports of anyone else acutely ill at the daycare. As I mentioned, the home daycare was not seen as a likely exposure site. But involving our Department of Environmental Protection was a key move. They helped us in identifying and conducting the actual testing in the homes and in the daycare center and the cars of all of the parents. It highlights the importance of this interagency collaboration, the Department of Health, EPA, our local Environmental Protection, and also our Department of Children and Families that regulates these facilities. And when daycares or other childcare settings are identified as possible sites of mercury exposure, every effort should be made to explore and test these sites thoroughly. And prevention is the key to reducing mercury poisoning. That is what I have, and this is my contact information for Dr. Prakash Moulay. But as I mentioned, I guess we're going to wait to the end, but Mike and I are both here for questions. Thank you.